push it up. There we go. Okay. Well, if it's shaky, we're all shaky. That's what it is. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for welcoming me to this place. I was here many, many years ago, decades actually, I think, when I was moderator. I think I paid a visit for a meeting or something like that. I was moderator of the United Church 22 years ago. It seems like a century ago, but a long time. And some of you may know that I got into a lot of controversy at that time for my theology. So please don't be alarmed. You only have me this Sunday. And you don't have to worry too much. So thank you to Phil for inviting me. And I want to thank Phil particularly on your behalf for his work with the Calgary Alliance for the Common Good. You've probably heard too much of this, so I'm not going to say very much. But I just want to thank you for the work you are putting into developing that organization and by implication to the congregation, because you're involved in it as well. So I want to thank you for your participation in getting Calgary Alliance for the Common Good going. And I didn't know that Ryan worshipped here, but of course we've got to thank Ryan because he's not only a Lutheran, but he's an organizer and is largely responsible for bringing people together from all over our city to create a community organization for the common good. So I wanted to say thank you to the congregation and to you two guys in particular. I also want to just say thanks and acknowledge before I was moderator of the United Church, and the moderator's job is the national leader of the church. It's a 3-year term. And so I had a leave of absence from Scarborough United, where I was the minister. But before that, I was what they call the executive secretary of the regional governance body of the United Church, in those days called the conference. And we did a lot of ecumenical work, and I was in the heart of that and so on. And I had great relationships with three of your bishops. Bishop Schoberg, anybody remember Don Schoberg? Yeah, wonderful man. And anyway, with Bishop Schoberg, a Sardison, and I think he's still living in Calgary, and with your current Bishop Johnson. And with each of those people, I was involved in various projects. And when I thought about coming here, I thought the leadership you've had from those three anyway has been great, and it was wonderful for me to get to know them and so on. And the other one was shared ministries in the north, where the Lutherans, Anglicans, and United Churches worked together in places like Slave Lake and in the Northwest Territories and so on. Well, I guess one other little thing. I'm sorry, I'm going to get to the sermon in a minute. But I don't talk to Lutherans very often. We have a daughter in Yellowknife, and she lives there all her life. So whenever we go to Yellowknife, like we did for Thanksgiving, we go to Yellowknife United Church, and the Lutheran congregation is in that room, and the United Church congregation is in this room. At Thanksgiving, though, we worship together, and so about a month ago, I guess, or whenever Thanksgiving was, the leader of worship at that time was the Lutheran pastor, and we had a combined worship. So I've had a little connection with Lutherans along the way. It's kind of cool. And so thank you for having me here this morning. I believe that this is a great time to be alive, and it is an even greater time to be the church. I don't know about you, but I know in the United Church, some people are sort of feeling uncertain and not sure what's going to go on, and congregations are dwindling and blah, 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 and all that stuff. I know that, but it's a great time to be the church in these very challenging times. I know these are difficult times for many people. Individually and collectively, we're facing some big challenges. In fact, we face, I think, unprecedented ethical, moral, and spiritual challenges in these days. But isn't that exactly what the church is for? Isn't the church here to try to respond and give encouragement and give sustenance around ethical, moral, and spiritual matters. These days, you see, call upon our imagination, our faith, our biblical story, and our compassionate action. This is our time. This is the time that we are called to shine and to give encouragement to our society from our faithful roots. Now, this morning I'm talking about climate and that kind of thing. I want you to do something, and it's just going to be for 30 seconds. I want you to think of your favorite place in the natural world. I don't care where it is. A place in the natural world where you feel alive, where you feel nurtured, where your soul is refreshed. The place that you would protect for your children and grandchildren or the next generation. So for 30 seconds, 15 seconds each, I want you to just share with your neighbor that special place in nature for you. You got 30 seconds. Oh, you don't have to tell a long story. It's just, you know, I love going there or whatever. Okay, 30 seconds. Okay, that's it. Actually, I forgot to mention that after worship, there's going to be an opportunity to, after some coffee and visiting, so on, to come back in here for some conversation, Q&A and conversations, if you want, so you may pick up on what we just did. Now, I want you to listen to this from the famous author Anonymous. Remember that author? I don't know where she was born, but anyway. If the earth were only a few feet in diameter, floating a few feet above a field somewhere, people would come from everywhere to marvel at it. People would walk around it, marveling at its big pools of water, at its little pools, and the water flowing between the pools. People would marvel at the bumps on it and the holes in it, and they would marvel at the very thin layer of gas surrounding it and the water suspended in that gas. The people would marvel at all the creatures walking around the surface of the ball and all the creatures in the water. And the people would declare it precious because it was the only one. And they would protect it so that it would not be hurt. The ball would be the greatest wonder known, and people would come and behold it from all over the place to be healed, to gain knowledge, to know beauty, and to wonder how it could be. People would love it and defend it with their lives because they would know somehow that their lives, their own roundness, could be nothing without it. If the earth were only a few feet in diameter. So you see, when I think about the climate crisis and how it can be depressing for us all, and if you're not depressed sometimes about it, you're not paying attention. But when we think about that, I think it's very important to start with gratitude and sheer wonder for Mother Earth. and the gift of life that she gives all of her creatures. For all of life, in fact, it's the important thing to do is to begin with gratitude and wonder at this place we call home. Rabbi Abraham Heschel once said, our goal should be to live in radical amazement. Every morning, wake up with radical amazement that we are alive in this beautiful, round, precious Mother Earth. Because yes, indeed, we live in a beautiful earthly home. Mother Earth is amazingly fragile, yet resilient, complex, mysterious, and stunning in every aspect of her being. So when addressing the climate crisis, and I call the climate crisis the embracing reality of our time, I don't see it as just one of the important issues that we can tick off on a box. Oh, yeah. Oh, a priority right now. Oh, that's a priority issue. We have a list of issues, don't we, that we care about and worry about and so on. I see the climate crisis as the embracing reality in which everything else happens. And so we begin with humility. That's hard for human beings sometimes. We begin with humility, wonder, reverence, and gratitude. Now, I agree with the 97% of scientists or the 10,000 scientists who signed the recent declaration that the climate crisis is, in fact, an emergency. Now, I know also that the climate crisis is a matter of science. It's a matter of innovation. It's a matter of technology. It's a matter of economics. It's a matter of jobs. It's a matter of politics, engineering, and all those things that everybody talks about. I know that. And I read tons of books about it. I brought some of them here that you might want to look at. But I think just as important, it is a matter of ethics and spirituality. I don't imagine many of you, when you've read about it or heard people talk about it, you've heard the word spirituality in the same sentence as the climate crisis. And yet I believe that the climate crisis is a deeply spiritual matter. After all, from the very beginning in our sacred texts, the earth and all of its creatures is called good. It's fundamental to how we see the world. Now, I think the basic spiritual question for our time, every generation has the key spiritual things it's got to deal with. The key one for our time is to figure out or to address the question, who are we as human beings? Or maybe even more importantly, who do we think we are? Who do we think we are? That's the key spiritual question every community of faith needs to grapple with, in my view. Second question is, how are we to live with respect in creation? How are we to live with respect in creation? And then, of course, how are we to live in communion with all the life forms of Mother Earth, all the life forms, including each other? How are we to live with respect in creation, and how are we to live in communion with one another in our complex and mysterious and beautiful earthly home? Now, these are deeply spiritual questions, and they're the ones that I think our generation needs to address. And this is why faith communities have such an important role to play, I believe, in helping everybody, in helping humankind deal with this crisis that we are in. To help our society grapple seriously and conscientiously and collaboratively with the climate crisis. Now, it's interesting to me. I've been working on this for a long time. I was part of the ecumenical movement and the first petitions that were delivered 22 years ago in 1997 to Prime Minister Kretschmann when Kairos, which is made up of the Lutherans and Catholics and Uniteds and so on, I remember carrying boxes of petitions around climate change to Kretschmann. That was a long time ago. Anyway, I've been around this stuff for a long time. And I believe that we, the faith communities, have a huge role to play. And I'm encouraged that more and more I see, quote, secular commentators understanding that. That this is a moral and spiritual question, as well as all those other things. So while some people yell at each other and divide us, spiritual communities, I think, can take us to a deeper level and a place of deeper understanding and cooperation about how we are to deal with it. Just one little story. Back in 10 years ago, when one of the conferences in Copenhagen was going on around climate change, I decided that something had to be done. What witnesses was I going to make? So I decided I would fast, no food, just broth, clear broth and water for a week during the climate conference. And I would not just do it at home. I would do it in front of my member of parliament's office. He was Jim Prentice, who was actually in Copenhagen during that time as a member of the government. So I was in front of his office, and then I went in front of Stephen Harper's constituency office. I went in front of City Hall, and I went in front of my MLA's office. Minus 35 degrees, I fasted. Now, I was very clear to the media and to others that I was not protesting, and I was not on a hunger strike. I was praying. I was fasting. I was praying for our representatives to make the right decisions, to make a contribution. And actually, that caught people's imagination. There was quite a bit of media attached to that because people don't pray publicly for this kind of thing. They protest about it. Well, I do that too. But this was not that. This was a deeply spiritual exercise that I thought was important. And it was quite an interesting result. Nothing happened. Now, I'm going to name what I think is the major ethical question that we have to face. And it's something that faith communities all over the world, all through time actually, including the time the scriptures were written, and that is consumption. Simply put, we are plundering and consuming the earth for our own entitlements and our own self-indulgence. Now, that's a pretty strong statement. We are plundering the earth for our own self-indulgence. And I believe that our hyper-consumption society underlies the reality of the climate crisis. Toyota had an ad, about 6 months ago. They ran it for quite a while. And it was called the No Limits Event. And I thought, that's exactly the opposite of what we gotta hear. Mother Earth has limits. We have limits on what we can do, and so on. And then Jeep, and then followed by a bunch of other car companies, have ads that show Jeeps rushing across into the woodlands, going across streams, and so on, so they can end up on the mountaintop. If we have the money, we can do what we want. Well, faith communities know that's not true. We are called to restrain ourselves within the limits that Mother Earth has given. In his wonderful encyclical, and I brought a copy of it just to wave it later, Pope Francis says this. It's a beautiful document. He says, people may well have a growing ecological sensitivity, but it has not succeeded in changing their harmful habits of consumption, which rather than decreasing, appear to be growing all the time. It's a pretty concise statement from the Pope. So for me, the ethical question, I've said what I think the spiritual questions are for us, the ethical question for us is this: what does Mother Earth think we are entitled to. We got an idea what we think we're entitled to. What does Mother Earth think we, as part of the life that she nurtures, what does she think we are entitled to? It's a tough question. Anyway, the Luke passage tells us that the temples that we build, and I want to just do an analogy for today, it's not the structures as much in the context of today's sermon, the systems we have of consumption and plundering the earth will be destroyed. That's what the gospel lesson says, that those temples that we build, they'll be destroyed. And I think we could spend a whole day unpacking what that really means for us in our time. Then Hosea foretells that the land mourns. This could have been written yesterday. The land mourns, and all who live in it languish, together with the wild animals and birds of the air, even the fish of the sea are perishing. So what do we do? Well, Job and his struggle with God. The Job passage says this: ask the animals. They'll tell you. They'll teach you. The animals and the birds and the fish and the plants will tell you. And then that wonderful Vietnamese Buddhist Thich Nhat Hanh, who has gained a lot of popularity in the world, very gentle person from Vietnam, who because of the war established a community called Plum Village in France. Anyway, he says, what we need to do is to hear within us, to hear within us the sounds of the earth crying. The sounds of the earth crying. Then he goes on to say that a spiritual revolution is needed if we are going to confront the ecological challenges we face. Hear within us, and then have a spiritual revolution. Well, think back now to that place where you are nurtured in nature, where your soul is restored, and that place that gives your heart and your soul strength and joy and a sense of the beauty of the earth. And then think of the ethical question, addressing the spiritual crisis that we are in. To what does Mother Earth think we are entitled? Can I do the quote? Got time for that? That is a great quote, and you're not going to guess who it is, I don't think. I'll tell you after. But this is the challenge. I saw this in a magazine called Resurgence, which was out of the UK many years ago. But it's just as relevant today as it was when it was written. This crisis is bringing us an opportunity to experience what few generations in history ever have the privilege of knowing, a generational mission, the exhilaration of a compelling moral purpose, a shared and unifying cause, the thrill of being forced by circumstances. I think that's a great line. The thrill of being forced by circumstances to put aside the pettiness and conflict that so often stifle the restless human need for transcendence, the opportunity to rise. And when we do rise, it will fill our spirits and bind us together. Those who are now suffocating in cynicism and despair will be able to breathe freely. Those who are now suffering from a loss of meaning in their lives will find hope. When we rise, we will experience an epiphany as we discover that this crisis is not really about politics at all. It is a moral and a spiritual challenge. Who do you think wrote that? Anybody? I know you're thinking about somebody. Anyway, that the person who wrote that was a politician. The person who wrote it was Al Gore, and he wrote it many years ago. But he calls that at the closing line, it is a moral and spiritual challenge. Let us pray. This prayer is called Prayers, Make Prayers for the Rivers. Make prayers for the life of the rivers. Make prayers for the creeks and the streams. Make prayers to the holy mystery. Make prayers for Earth Mother's dreams. Pray for what lives in the water. Pray for what lives by the shore. Pray for whatever drinks water. Pray for all that and more. Ask for courage to clean up the rivers. Ask for hope to heal shorelines and streams. We are the ones called to action to restore the Earth Mother's dreams. Fall down on your knees by the water. Fall down on the muck, sand, or slate. Fall down in humility, hope, and love, and pray that it's not too late. Amen.